trauma many of us have had to deal with
over the years. I recall once having to look at some term papers, and I asked myself, how can I possibly say something that the work is reading worthy of attention? I dealt with a problem by handing the paper to Sleds, which even as a 16-year-old I realized was not really an ideal solution, and I'm not recommending it to anybody here and in the other places. So here I am today, and I'm ready to speak about the Rav and the Rambam on Tefillah. Clearly an area where one would doubt whether I have that extra knowledge to make the discussion worthy. The issue that I'm raising is the notion, which I've spoken to from time to time, of tefillah requiring a matir. And obviously, tefillah is a privilege. And this is actually unique to the Rav. Many writers have stressed that tefillah is a privilege. You look, for example, in the Rambam Kotler's Mishnah to the Aharon, sections where he discusses tefillah and he emphasizes a great deal. But the Rav held a more dramatic view. The Rav held that tefillah requires a matir, meaning that if he had not been commanded to pray, he would actually be unable to do so. This is really a remarkable thesis. Since the period in which I was occupied in editing the Rav's Talmud Tefillah, looking at some publications asked me about this particular issue, took questions about it, and whether in going through the manuscripts I had found anything to clarify certain issues. So even my discussion today doesn't have that much of a chiddush in it. At the very least, I know the topic is rotsui, and appropriate topic to speak about. Let's start by looking at a crucial passage in Rayonot LaTfilah, which was published in the late 70s. In which the Rav speaks about the unique contribution of the Rambam. The Rav says, speaking about how, where would we be without the Rambam, if we didn't have the Rambam, we wouldn't know how to daven, we wouldn't be able to daven, and Rambam redeemed tefillah from some kind of oblivion it might otherwise have fallen into. And then the Rambam, the Rav defines very precisely what the Rambam did. What the Rambam Meshechet Tefillah Ma'achaniti Mishtei Bechinot. It was revolutionary in two ways. Reishit Uechriya Halakha L'Ma'aseh Ki Atfilah Ha'Mitzvat Asen Divrei Torah B'Nigud Kim'at Ha'Muskan V'Lapashut Ha'Yokhet. The Rambam determined that tefillah is a mitzvah d'oraita against the consensus of halachic sources. We'll come back to in a moment. Tefillah every day is only rabban. Shenit, that tefillah is in haim of hashabbat. Secondly, that tefillah is identified with avodah shabbat. Idea, the fiat darat Rambam, kol mekipa b'chol mimal'ah, avod shalev is a sweeping, all-encompassing, all-suffusing idea, and yet said, get et tamtzitzi katoshal adam olukim, representing the essence of the man's relationship to God. This is what the Rambam says. And what the Rambam says. Now, we take these two pieces from a purely historical perspective. Having objected, the Rambam may not be quite as original as one gets the impression from what we have here. Professor Glickstein, a very important book, and a few others, he points out that almost all the elements we consider to be unique to the Rambam, the notion of being Doraita, are found in Gaonic literature before him. And lest one think that I was ignorant of that history, if you look in the footnotes, in Rav refers to the Sefer Mitzvot of Sadia Gaon, and the notes by the Perlo, a book that I was first made aware of, I think, in my first or second week in the Shia. So I was aware that you had this Gaonic literature before, and if you look through even the notion of Tzuba being identical to Rav Shabbalei, is found in some of the Gaonic material that the Perlo cites. Professor Glitzin goes on to say that in the light of all this Gaonic literature, if you're going to think of somebody being heroic, somebody breaking the mold, it could really be the Ramban, who disagreed with the Rambam's determination that he was Doraita. One could cavil at Professor Glickstein's statement, because sometimes the Gaonim counted things in their mitzvot, sometimes they included the Rabbanim's there. You can argue about the small details, but presumably the Rav did not mean that there were no Gaonic precedents, this is pretty aware of it. What the Rav meant was that were it not for the Rambam's authority, the Gaonic precedents would have been outweighed, at least in the Ashkenazic tradition, by the views of Chachmei Ashkenaz and by, perhaps, by a reading of Pshat and Gemara, and we would be led to conclude that Tfilah would have been the Rabbanon as far as we are concerned. In any event, on the basis of this statement of the Rambam's contribution to Tfilah, the Rav goes on to state, without the Rambam, you have no permission to pray. And that in that case, if you have no permission to pray, you would really be unable, as human beings, to express some of the most important religious feelings. If we're not going to look at the issue historically, conceptually, the next step really should be to take the Rav up as counterfactual. Ask ourselves, in a chinam, what would have been the case if we had rejected the Rambam? Try to think through what that situation would be and see what the Rambam would be at. So the Rav has two points. The idea of Tzuba being Doraita and the idea of Tzuba being a Baruch Shabbalei. First premise is that of Tzuba being Doraita. What if Tfilah were not Doraita? Here, there are two possibilities. Either you would say that Tfilah is Rabbanan, which is exactly what Rabban says, it's exactly the way you have to interpret the Gemara. Tfilah is not Doraita, then where did Tfilah come from? Or you could say, you know, mitzvah to pray, but that clearly doesn't fit any sources. If Tfilah is Rabbanan, take that option. And according to everybody, it is at least Rabbanan. Then the Rambam's pshat that Tfilah is Doraita is really not necessary. You say, how can people pray? People pray because Tfilah is Rabbanan. Furthermore, the Rav concedes that there's a basic Tfilah Doraita even according to Rambam. The Rav stresses both in Rainota Tshuva and in his notebooks and elsewhere that Rambam recognized an obligation Doraita to pray the Eight Star. Now, the Rav's Medayek, in the passage that I read to you, Medayek, that were not for the Rambam, no mitzvah with Palel B'chol Yom. that there's a weird. In Ramban, there would be a mix between Kalb and Sarah. But the Rav himself emphasized Balpeh that Ramai said the difference might not be all that great, because if you follow the more existentialist themes in the Rav's writing, and if you hold that people are always in a state of need, sometimes we're in urgent need, what the Rav calls superficial crisis, sometimes a deeper, it's a depth awareness, a logical crisis, we're always in a state of need, then even according to Ramban, there would be some kind of doraita. And certainly at the time when people are most in need of tefila, when they're aware of their needs, either urgently, in crisis, or perennially, people would be able to pray. So again, tefila is always going to be appropriate. And the question again is, what does the Rav mean by saying, without the Rambam, we would not be able to properly pray? Contradicted by the Rav's own statements. So let's turn to the second thesis. The Rav said that the Rambam identified, that without the Rambam, we would not be able to identify tefillah with avodah shebaolam. Again, you know that there are earlier Gaonic sources, it's not my concern right now. But offhand, this claim is less grammatically first. You talk to people in the streets, and you ask them what the Rav said about the Rambam, the idea of what cures the right to the Rabbanim, that everybody knows about. That second point, that Tfila is identical to Avodah Shebaolam, that people, you know, don't seem to be impressed by to the same degree. Although it is an important thesis. You know, among the looking through Gaonic material is Ibn Gabiro's Tefillah Mitzvot, he really has Tefillah and the Avodah Shebaolam as two separate mitzvot. So clearly he did not take for granted that two of them are identical. Nevertheless, the Rav does give the second point equal building. And later on, if you read the Rav's text carefully, when he does talk about Tfila requiring a Makid, in fact, without the Rambam getting to pray, the Rambam does not connect that claim specifically to the question of Doraita and Rabbanan. He's connecting it to his general view about the Rambam. So let me suggest, therefore, with respect to the Tfila requiring a Makid, the definition of Avodah Shebaolam may really be more significant than the question of Doraita versus Rabbanan. Were Tfila not Doraita under the Rambam's definition, we might still be able to call out to God. Eit Sara, according to Ramban, or with Rabbanan, we certainly would be able to speak to the Avodah Shebaolam in our distress. The only point is that that act would not count as Avodah Shebaolam. That would be the major difference. If it's not Avodah Shebaolam, and here I'm trying out kind of the flesh and maybe Avodah Shebaolam, if it were not Avodah Shebaolam, that outcry would be an expression of our selfish needs. It might be permitted. It might give us relief. We might even consider it to be a privilege. It would not count as worship. It would not count as Avodah Shebaolam. Recall that when we were planning the Pasuk's location of the notebooks and Tfila, Yitzchak Porsky, believed that the title of the book should not be prayer, it should be worship of the heart, Avodah Shebaolam. At the time, I felt intuitively that this was right. And everybody else who heard this also felt it was right. But I realized that the
conception of Rosh HaBalev here, it's much more than simply being a synonym for tefillah. But let me remark further that the Rav sometimes distinguished quite sharply between tefillah and za'afa. You see this both in the English writings, in the field of tradition 1978, and in the Yahrzeit Shiurim as well. Za'afa, the outcry, which is reflected in Slichot and the Malkeinu, the Za'afa expresses human pain. As I'd like to say, a stricken animal also cries out in pain. And presumably the animal does not require a matzah for this. So when the Rav emphasizes that tefillah requires a divine mandate, he's probably focusing on tefillah of Rosh HaBalev rather than tefillah of. Come back to this in a minute, but move on for the moment. And one more comment on the Rambam and the Rambam. In order to go, I assume that for that for the Rambam, you would still have the Rambam's idea of Tefillah Be'etzara. Two paragraphs later, when the Rambam introduces the Rambam's conception, talks about how for the Rambam there is Tefillah Be'etzara, the Rambam remarks that the Rambam too recognized the connection between Sara and Tefillah in Hilchot Tanya. And he insisted that Rambam is original here. The Rambam is the one who introduced the notion of Tzrua Be'etzara, that meaning the Doraita, and so forth. So it may be said that in the third point here, in addition to the Rambam contributing the notion of Tzrua being Doraita, and the second notion of Tzrua being the Rosh HaBalev, it may be is that Rambam also ascribes to Rambam a third Chiddush with regard to response to Eitzara, and the Rav might tell you that without that advance in the Rambam might not have been able to take the next step and define Tefillah Be'etzara as a Doraita. So the Rambam would be responsible not only for his own position, but to indirectly be the Rambam's forerunner as well. Now let me make a further point. One hallmark of the Rav's approach to tefillah is the Rav's stress on the idea of bakasha. Again, in the Rav's writing, again and again, the sense that bakasha is the central to tefillah. The heart of the Shmoneh Esrei petition, the people who study with the Rav, it's almost automatic when you think of the description of Shmoneh Esrei. First Sheva, then Bakasha, then Moda. It's almost automatic for us to think that the Ikkar is Bakasha. First comes Sheva, because how can you approach Bakasha unless you have first begun the Sheva? And how can you then withdraw from Tefillah after you engage in Bakasha without ending with words of Moda? That's just automatic that the Bakasha is the Ikkar and the Sheva from the Moda are prologue and epilogue. The Rambam seems to hold this formulation. The Rav interprets the Rambam that way. It seems to be what the Rambam himself is saying. It's the smoothest way of reading the Rambam's Lashon in Tefillah and several other places. I believe that when the Rav stressed the centrality of Akasha, this is part and parcel of the thesis that tefillah requires a matzah. Precisely, because the Rav places so much importance on the fact that God invites us to discuss with him our needs, and that it's precisely for that reason that the Rav also stresses how remarkable it is if we're allowed to pray. And if tefillah was really essentially a matter of Sheva, which it is for many mystical writers, certainly is in many areas of halacha, how many mitzvot that are hogas given to shlamim, so many areas of halacha where Shabbat the hogah plays a role. If in fact tefillah was based on Shabbat and based on hogah, I don't know whether I would have felt the same necessity to emphasize the need for a matzah with regard to tefillah. Here there is something that occurred to me actually only coming up here, and I'm taking the risk of offering something half-baked, but I present it and I hope it will be covered. We're speaking about the centrality of Akasha. I think there are two different ways of looking at it. There are two different points. Three, one point is something in terms of responding to human need, the selfish aspect of it. But there are two more positive ways of looking at the role of Akasha. One possibility is to think of the need, the centrality of Akasha and Tefillah simply being connected with the nature of our coming before the Ribbono Shel Olam to begin with. Take a phrase which I met found in the Rav, a phrase from a non-Jewish writer with whom the Rav shares certain affinities in discussion of Tefillah called Bart. Bart said that people come to God simply with praise and with thanksgiving, you're not getting the entire human being to come to God. There's some fragment of the human being, the real human being, contains all of these needs and desires and distress and petition. If you leave that out, you're leaving out part of human beings. That entire human being is coming before the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's one way of looking at it. There's another way of looking at the centrality of Bakasha, where what Bakasha reflects is the sense of the human being being completely in God's hands. The sense of dependence. If I phrase it differently, the sense of tefillah as a cover. But in tefillah we recognize that we are in God's hands, we put ourselves in God's hands. Now, it occurs to me that in the Rav's work, particularly as we move, and the chronology is always very difficult here. If you take Ra'ayotel HaTfilah, which is certainly a mature work, edited and finally brought publication in the late 1970s, the issue of tefillah as a karban plays a very, very important role. I'm sure that the Rav would agree with that earlier phrase as well, and I wrote this about 2 years ago in a paper that the Lichtenstein very kind to give me detailed comments on, since he didn't criticize that point, I assume that it passed muster. But I think that if you take my local tefillah, that second element, which is really different, that element of tefillah as a karban, plays a much stronger role. To sum up what we have so far, each one of the individual points I've made does not entail that mitzvah tefillah was a matzah. If you took each point separately, you could argue against it as so. We could ground tefillah on the Rabbanan, we could ground tefillah on the Ramban, which is after all logically independent from the Ramban. You could interpret the connection of tefillah on the Baruch Shabbalei differently the way the Rav does. Nevertheless, the cumulative power of the evidence we extracted from the Rav is greater than each separate piece. There are a couple of points for further investigation, which I'm not going to get into now, namely the relationship between Fila and Zaka, which I wrote about at different times in his career. I don't want to attempt to try to find the declaration of Fila at this point. And I think it would also be a question of how the issues here, which I focused very much with Arthur Bakasha, how they would relate to the issues of Shabbat Hodah, other aspects of Tfila, when after all, with regard to those aspects of Tfila, we can also argue that Shabbat requires a mindset of sorts insofar as we would not be able to use certain language, which not to the fact that the Avot and Nevi'im were there before us. But I don't want to get into this issue, trying to cover one point at a time. There's one last question with regard to what Rav writes here. Rav's text in Rayonot HaTfila is marked by an extraordinary sense of a Hakadosh Baruch Hu to the Rambam. A very personalized language which is not at all common in usual halakhic and philosophical discussion. Last week it occurred to me that his language reads less at this position of Tfila at these points and like something that the Rav prepared for Yom Yun in honor of the Rambam. What was translated by note into English was really the question, what do you do with that paragraph? Does it really belong? Keep it, put in footnotes. Why do Rav do this? And I'll suggest two answers. One derives directly from our previous discussion. Understanding requires both analysis and synthesis. You analyze, you pull apart an argument, try to see what makes it tick. Analytic rigor generally does not take into account the personality of the person's utterances they're studying. It's colorless. Take the words, chop them up, pull them into pieces, see what possibilities, the possible interpretations can be given. Synthesis means putting the parts together again. It means you start with the pieces and arrive at a vision of the whole. The work of synthesis is often dependent on the personality that gives unity to the vision. We appreciate the teachers who train us in analytic skills. But the image stands before our eyes. The Yaakov Avinu who motivates Yosef in times of crisis is a synthesizer. Somebody who does not only take things apart, but shows us how to make them whole again. The second answer is that the study of Tfila pertains to our innermost being. The Tfila is really different from other areas of Torah. The first suggestion I made might be true of other areas of Torah as well, or even other areas of secular study, where we look to a teacher to not only teach us how to analyze, but also to put things together. Not only can we think of our greatest teachers, and we very often think of them in terms that they took simple things and made them complicated, and sometimes made them very complicated, and we very often forget that these same teachers very often take things that are complicated and confused, both intellectually and religiously and personally, and make those complicated things simple and direct. The second point that I make relates not only to learning in general, to intellectual life in general, but to certain parts of our life, of which Tfila here is an important example. To learn how to pray requires not only an intellectual competence, it also requires personal example. What is remarkable, astonishing, when you read the language which the Rav uses here, is that the Rav is quite able, very innocently, to speak about reaching out over centuries and creating a personal relationship with his Rebbe, namely the Rambam. They're in the same room, they're speaking to each other. Moshe Lichtenstein wrote very powerfully about the Rav's relationship to the Ramban in the same context. And this is a remarkable thing. There are few people who can do it on a regular basis. And those of us who can do it on occasion, in part do it because we see people who are role models in that regard. For us, it may not be that common experience. And that is why we are inestimably blessed when we have among us a living teacher and something we can learn, both intellectually and the deeper personal matters that sometimes overcome and remain even when a particular piece of Torah is no longer clear in our minds. Baruch Hashem, Zoche to learn from Moreno Rabbeinu for many, many years to come.